So welcome to the Prospectus podcast. I'm David Gold and I'm the chair of Prospectus. My guest today is Mark Williams, the chief exec of Heart and Soul. Just to say, the purpose of this podcast is to talk about how one organization adapted and changed to what we'll call the new external environment, which has been driven by the events of COVID-19. So welcome, Mark, who is founder, inspiration and chief exec of Heart and Soul. We've had the pleasure, it's been my pleasure anyway, of knowing you for 20 years. Mark has a real talent to facilitate people of all abilities to truly change their lives, to seize opportunities and to develop skills, sometimes skills they didn't realize they had. He does all this very quietly. He does it so quietly, in fact, that sometimes in a room you might not even know he's there because he will hide away and let others bask in the sunshine. Yet over all these years, I can honestly say, hand on heart, his enthusiasm and passion in better lives for other people never, ever dims. Welcome, Mark.
Wow. Thank you very much, David. Yes. Well, it also has been a pleasure to know David for the last 20 years. And I always enjoy checking in and sharing together both how our journeys are evolving. And David also has been hugely supportive of Heart and Soul over the years, which I really, really appreciate.
If you could start off, Mark, by telling us a little bit about Heart and Soul, touching on ethos and values, that would be great. Thank you.
Yeah. So I guess the main thing to say about Heart and Soul, which maybe sets us out a little bit differently from other organizations who maybe do stuff, you know, for learning disabled people, is Heart and Soul absolutely believes in the power and talents of people with learning disabilities and autistic people. So that is front and center of everything that we do. Our perspective is that people have capabilities and wisdom and knowledge to share and impart. And when you're in a situation where you're focusing on all the things people can do, it just creates a very different sort of dynamic and really makes for a different kind of collaboration. So it's Heart and Soul has been around for 32 years now. And we are described as an arts organization, a disability arts organization. I like to think of us actually as a creative community of people who are working to make a more fun, equal and open world for everyone. We use creativity and the arts as our main sort of channels of enabling that. But increasingly we are diversifying into other areas because we're really understanding continually what's still needing to be changed and what's important for people. And most recently, we've been undertaking a major research project at the Wellcome in Euston, where we've taken over the hub on the fifth floor and are running a transdisciplinary project that works with three different universities, academics, clinical psychologists, artists, all with the view of how we can flip the microscope that is often put on people with learning disabilities and autistic people and flip things in such a way that people have the, you know, they have the power. We trust in them to be the researchers, to be the co-researchers, the co-designers, to be asking the questions, to be really understanding how they see the world and creating a different type of conversation that is resulting in new technology advances, in new ideas around co-design and the ways that things can be. And so we're always interested in new ways of being, new ways of doing, new ways of sharing, and new ways of learning. And the kind of values that underpin this are around kindness, about belief, trust, and respect. And sharing, you know, of an unfashionable thing to say, but putting love very much at the heart of what we do. and understanding that in order for things to progress and for us to get better as a society, we need all perspectives and all voices heard and celebrated and understood.
Great. Thank you very much for that. That is absolutely terrific and nice to have love at the forefront of everything without a shadow of a doubt. I'm going to start on the questions now, and we'll just start on a general one, really, which is the COVID-19 situation has been really quite difficult to navigate because of the speed at which it's unfolded, really. But obviously, particularly for the arts, and I just wondered if you had any personal observations at all around that.
I think it's been a fascinating time to just see how people have responded to what has been certainly in all of our lifetimes the most sort of dramatic step change that we can probably ever remember. I think it's been interesting to note how maybe some of the larger, more established institutions appear to have been a little bit stuck, maybe, in terms of maybe not being able to imagine a different way of delivering or doing what they do, and also maybe exposing a little bit of a chasm between the institutions and the people who run them and the actual general public and the audiences who they serve. And I've noticed a lot of furloughing going on, and not a huge amount of activity, whereas with maybe some of the smaller, maybe more kind of the organizations who may be a little bit more connected with their communities, I've seen really agile, imaginative and nimble responses that have immediately offered kind of genuine connections between the organizations and their audiences.
So I guess what you're suggesting is the bigger kind of bigger institutions and furloughing, hoping that crossing their fingers and it'll all be okay when the economy comes back to life and that they'll just be able to go back to normal.
Well, yes, and I think in a sense this is, you know, that's, there's never been any promise that that's going to be the case, and any sort of analysis or understanding of pandemics would indicate, you know, that there isn't a sort of any kind of quick solution, and you know, antidotes and vaccines normally take several years to appear. Yeah. So there does seem to be something about really noticing what's really going on, mm-hmm. and working with what's happening, and actually that doesn't mean that things have to grind to a complete halt. It's more about really reimagining and collaborating to do things in a different way, because it's not that people have suddenly sort of lost their drive or their ability to create or to make art. It's just that we're now needing to be doing that in slightly different ways. And I think, you know, in a sense, with any great sort of change or crisis, it's always about focusing on the opportunities and not necessarily getting stuck on the things that you suddenly can't do, but really looking, well, what could we do instead?
And obviously that's pertinent to this, and I know we're going to talk about that. But just before we kick off on that, when you and I chatted a few weeks ago, you talked briefly about how the client group of Heart and Soul, how it had been affected by this situation, with some fascinating observations and numbers. And I just wondered if you wouldn't mind just to kind of just paint a little picture on that before we get into the questions of opportunities and responses.
Sure. I mean, you know, we work primarily with people with learning disabilities and autistic people, mostly people who, you know, that they've not been through some sort of medical analysis before they come to Heart and Soul. They've just come to us, and we're very sort of open to working with whoever comes to us. But we have an existing, you know, regular community of around 160 people who regularly engage in activities at Heart and Soul. And of that group. I mean, generally, there is a higher proportion of people with learning disabilities and autistic people who have underlying health conditions. And so, you know, there was probably a larger incidence of people who were immediately needing to shield than maybe the general population. But also, interestingly, you know, some people who live at home have older parents. So again, they would, if they might not be having underlying health conditions themselves, but they'd be living with people who do, or maybe people who live in residential setups, again, are living with other people who you know, have these more kind of vulnerable conditions. So, you know, and actually the evidence of the last few months, unfortunately, has also indicated that there's been a substantially larger majority per head of learning disabled and autistic people who have died during this time. With autistic people, it's very sad to hear, you know, of an increase in people taking their own lives. Mm-hmm. And with people with learning disabilities, you know, there is, I think, twice as many people with learning disabilities have died during the COVID epidemic as people who don't have learning disabilities.
Well, that's pretty sobering, all of that. And obviously being part of your response. But I wondered just if you could take a few moments just to talk about your kind of your immediate response. I guess we're talking about mid-March for the first 3 or 4 weeks, that mad period. If you could maybe talk about how Heart and Soul responded before we get into some of the bigger changes.
Yeah, so we've got two branches of Heart and Soul currently, one based at the Albany Arts Centre in Deptford, and one at the Wellcome Collection in Euston. And obviously, Jeremy Farrar, who's the director of Wellcome, is also on the SAGE committee. And so we had a little bit of extra intel, I guess, around the fact that the COVID-19 was coming and that it was likely to be a bit more serious than it was currently being painted. So we had our annual Beautiful Octopus Club, which is a big nightclub event that has happened in a number of different venues over the years, but was scheduled to happen across five floors of Wellcome in mid-April. So before the lockdown happened, we'd made the decision that we were going to postpone that. And that, again, was before anybody else was really postponing things, but we were very conscious of the health vulnerabilities of people who come to Heart and Soul and might be coming as an audience. And that prompted a really helpful discourse with Wellcome, and I think kind of, well, I was told, partly accelerated their decision to close their building a week before the lockdown happened. So we were slightly getting into the mindset of thinking, right, we're going to have to do things differently. And obviously our first priority was, how can we remain connected with people who come to Heart and Soul? So we set up a rota whereby every week the 160 people who we'd identified as regular attenders would all receive a phone call. And we also commissioned an artist called Ben Connors, who is a comic book illustrator. And he started working on creative packs, which we have sent out every 2 weeks and have, in the last 10 weeks, involved kind of co-creation with Heart and Soul artists, which basically, you know, offer people, you know, something physical to have in their hand, but also some way of responding and sharing what's going on for them. So that could be as simple as a sort of day planner or, you know, meal planners, but also, what do you see outside your window? What are you listening to? What's making you laugh? You know, and a whole series of different things that people could respond to. And we also sent people, you know, art materials so that they'd have something to work with. And we know that both those things, the actual physical connection with speaking to people on the phone, but also then things arriving through the post, really made a difference to people immediately and actually enabled there to be very, you know, almost a kind of seamless, continual connection. So there wasn't that great sort of everything's cancelled and nothing's going on, we don't know what's happening. Obviously, alongside that, I was very conscious of our staff team and, you know, everyone was in a huge state of shock. And we invested in, you know, extending a health and wellbeing bursary for the team, working with an employment support external group who could offer sort of counselling and support to people, and just also having a more flexible approach to how people could be working from home, acknowledging that we had people who were, some people living in very small flats or with young children, or, you know, it all changed. So suddenly adopting this, you know, understanding, listening and flexible model, but also being very proactively focused on connecting with people who come to Heart and Soul, and finding ways that kind of creative juice and collaborating feel that we have was able to continue is most important.
So it sounds like you were probably working at the weekends as well, because that was quite a lot to achieve in 3 or 4 weeks. And you talking there did remind me that, you know, there isn't any part of Heart and Soul that doesn't base itself in being super creative. And I think that's always been part of your successful DNA, is that you really are great on comms in all sorts of ways. So thank you for that. I guess what we found as well over the last 3 or 4 months now is many organizations have tried to move into some form of digital delivery. And I just wondered how you've embraced digital for your client group.
Yes, well, with great gusto. I mean, the good thing with Heart and Soul is we've been very focused around digital channels and connectivity and creativity really for the last nearly 10 years, I guess. And we work with some really talented associates, digital associates, who are, you know, very comfortable and confident in the digital arena. So, I mean, two things really. One is that we really had to ascertain, you know, who was digitally comfortable and, you know, who wasn't. And then what did the people who weren't need in order to access what was clearly going to become a really significant means of communicating. So Heart and Soul works with people aged 10 upwards, and we certainly found in the 10 to 25 age group that people were feeling pretty competent and confident, and people had, you know, iPhones or iPads or computers at home. But we found in the older age group that actually this was going to be quite a challenge. So we again, you know, really tried to understand what were people's situations, what was their broadband like, what devices did they have, how could we improve the quality of the digital communication? And that might be as simple as somebody having a stand for their iPad, so you wouldn't have that kind of looking up someone's chin when you were talking to them.
I've had a lot of conversations like that.
Or it might be, you know, investing in a decent USB microphone, so the quality of the sound could be better. Or it might actually be, you know, investing in a device for people. And we'd learned back in 2012, when we'd done this global digital project called the Dean Rodney Singers, that the iPad and the tablet actually was the most accessible means of, you know, sharing digital connections. So, you know, we had a number of iPads that obviously were no longer being used during lockdown. So those got distributed to people who needed them. And then a few sort of were kind of bought for people. And then again, really within a couple of weeks, we managed to create Do Your Own Thing, which is a monthly get together on a Saturday, you know, clearly after school, and not on school days, where about 40 young people with learning disabilities and autistic people have been coming together to the Albany and basically leading really various music, visual arts, drama, digital activities. And we transitioned rapidly to having a space online where people could see the session leaders that they'd normally work with, who had been filmed and were talking about what was on offer, and then, you know, experimented with kind of large Zoom experiences with lots of breakout sessions where people could go to the different activities that they normally did and also kind of be in that space and all see each other. And we've continued to, we now do those every fortnight because they were so successful. And similarly, we were doing something similar for All Sorts, which is again working with 18 upwards group, and very much experimenting, trying things, listening to what people said, and exploring, you know, how we could continually evolve this offer for people. And then for the artists, because there's a number of artists who are artists and they're right or emerging artists, and they collaborate with different people. So again, it was how we could rapidly set up sessions and then create. There's a digital tool called Padlet, which is a really visual way of documenting and recording what people are doing. So we ensured that everybody could see, could upload what they were doing, you know, even if it was just, you know, a simple music making session, but everyone could continually learn from what everybody else was doing, because we were suddenly all in this new space. And we set up a creative isolation sort of team who've been meeting every week since lockdown, again, just to talk about what they're learning and sharing. And then in addition, we employed two new disabled associate artists who we'd been working with at the Hub, really to ensure that that sort of lived experience was central to our sharing and, you know, and looking at access and looking at easy read instructions for how to, you know, get on a Zoom meeting or and introduced, you know, things like the Padlet and also something called Slack, which is another more accessible channel in lieu of emails, which we found quite useful for sharing.
Gosh, so you've done quite a lot by way of embracing digital. Just out of interest, I mean, I end up talking about clients quite often during this period and the digital aspect of it. And I just sometimes people are finding that their staff teams actually aren't as comfortable with digital. How was that for your kind of in-house team? Was everyone fairly comfortable, or was there work that had to be done there as well?
I think it's just been a case of being very open to learning and you know, the culture at Heart and Soul is very much about it being okay to try new things, and if things don't work, you know, we always learn something. So, you know, definitely some one-to-one chats and checking in with people. And again, you know, very practically, if it's about, you know, a different chair or a different technology tool which aids you know, more effective working, then obviously we've been, you know, ensuring that those are in place for people. I think one of the main things has been kind of acknowledging the intensity of the online working experience, you know, and we now no longer have back-to-back Zoom meetings, and there's always breaks. And we also actually shortened, you know, or certainly made it an offer to people that the working day could be a little bit shorter and more flexible, just so. And, you know, central to what we've been saying to everybody is to put their family and friends first, you know, and actually just being able to say that then actually gives perspective on work, which is obviously very important. But during a period where people haven't been seeing their family or their parents, actually just acknowledging that and ensuring that people understand that that's understood and important, I think has made a difference. And it's kind of it's lowered the kind of anxiety around the situation.
Great. Thanks for that. I mean, building, I guess, on what you were talking about with regard to digital delivery and the client group, yeah. I mean, indeed, maybe also the home team as well, is what organisational or support or delivery changes will stay with Heart and Soul in order for you to be both more effective, so I guess better outcomes, and better and more efficient, I guess, more bang for your buck, really.
Yeah. Well, I mean, interestingly, you know, the really simple one would be with the Do Your Own Thing sessions, which have moved from monthly to fortnightly. And I don't think there's no way that we won't be, even if we were all physically together in the space at the Albany once a month, these online sessions every 2 weeks would still be carrying on. I think there's an interesting flip that's happened, whereas, you know, before you'd have your meeting in a physical space, and you'd have the one person sort of somewhere in the corner on Skype looking a bit miserable and a bit ignored. Yeah. I think this has all changed, And there's people who couldn't access Heart and Soul before, either because they lived too far away, mm-hmm. or there were, you know, physical reasons why it was hard to travel that distance. They can now be included in whatever we do. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've been piloting, you know, we had a series of Deptford Club nights, which actually have all been happening online. So we had a very hilarious quiz show. We had a bingo night. We had an EP launch. We had a DJ doing a set actually last week with people tuning in. So there's bizarrely been more connection. And I guess the thing I've really noticed is I thought that the physical space was more important than it's turned out to be. And actually that you can still maintain connection and still maintain collaboration in the digital space. And clearly, I think we all know that we're not going to need to be in the office quite as much as we thought we were, unless mm-hmm. it's for us, I think, unless it's for really clear face-to-face activities and stuff. A lot more can happen online, and we can save a lot more time. And I think everybody's been experiencing doing things that they weren't doing before. And we, you know, I really hope that those kind of, you know, as humans, we have this need to release pressure and to express and to create. And we want to kind of keep going with those and not sort of suddenly have to go back to some old way, which now suddenly doesn't look quite as shiny and maybe is quite as attractive as it used to.
So I guess maybe to summarize that a little is that you feel that certainly the physical space won't sit there as a kind of core of everything. And that's the kind of the biggest change by way of efficiency. And actually the effectiveness is to explore some of the creative channels in digital and indeed have more time to do it more efficiently.
Exactly.
That's lovely. And by the way, just for people listening into that, just in case they don't know, Deptford is in South London. So we're being a bit London centric by assuming everyone knows where Deptford is, but it is in South London. Then there might not be any answer to this at all, Mark, really, but what has changed in the ranking of what you believe is important in delivering on this very important Heart and Soul mission?
As a result of this, well, it's interesting. I mean, we've got a big project, which we hope will be taking place from January next year. And I think this is sort of slightly building on what we've been learning by being based at the Wellcome as well, is that actually health is still a very, very significant issue for people at Heart and Soul. And a felt sense of inequality around health outcomes and being understood and being comfortable, I think, in interactions with healthcare professionals, and a sense that there's something that, you know, people describe when they're at Heart and Soul, that they feel that people believe in them, but they also have this sense of moving forward and moving further. And in many sort of health situations, they feel like they're under a microscope and they're being analyzed and they're being they're kind of being medicalized, and you know, and as we know, anybody who's trying to get any benefits is having to make an exhaustive list of all the things that they can't do, and it's so focused around this very, very sort of unempowered perception of people as humans. So we're really interested in how we can take the learning and the sort of areas of co-design, co-production, co-research, which we've been doing at Wellcome, into health and social care professional situations, and really genuinely look at not just redesigning, but actually having some real action and change in terms of how things are done. And in a sense, to bring the healthcare professionals into the Heart and Soul cultural space, where actually it's not all about risk, and you know, it's much more about experimentation and trying things and connecting as equal humans, and understanding that actually there's voices that are missing and lived experience voices, which could significantly improve how we deliver an awful lot of not just healthcare. I mean, I guess a lot of sort of systems and processes.
Wow, that's a big one to take on. I mean, and absolutely right. I mean, moving from a deficit model to something that's more asset-based is without a doubt the way to go. And as always, you have great ambition. Before we finish up, I just wondered if you had any last words of advice or encouragement for other organisations navigating the new external environment.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the key thing is obviously very much connect with the people who use your whatever you are. If it's your if you're a venue, it's your audience. If it's if you're selling something, it's your customers, and understand where they're at and what you know what's changing for them and what they're looking for and how you can work together to make that happen. And I guess in a sense to be as present as you can to the situation that we're in and free yourself to be as innovative to try as many new things and to let go of the things that you no longer can do but really focus on more what are the things that we can do and in a sense not be too fixated on this kind of new normal future which is so unclear at the moment because I think that could also be quite a distraction. And also, as we've just been experiencing, I don't know when this is going to go out, but all the people who've suddenly gone on holiday to Spain might be, just wondering.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that's terrific. Mark, thank you so much for your honesty, for your, as always, great clarity. And I always leave conversations with you feeling that I've had the opportunity to learn so much. And I hope the people listening to this feel the same. But thank you so much and wishing, obviously, both you and Heart and Soul continuing amazing and fabulous success. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, David.